Amen. Grab your seats, everyone. Grab your seats. Hopefully it won't be too long today, so don't panic too much there. But we seem to live in a fractured world. Has anyone noticed that? A world just seems to be a little bit of, oh my goodness. Can you pop the PowerPoint up? Is that all right, Connor? Cheers. Get myself going on. And we live in a world that just seems to be so divided. And today I'm going to talk about unity. And this month in our church and next month, we're talking about what it means to be church. And so when I share about church today and about unity in church, I think these principles aren't just for church, but they're actually for our home lives, for our family lives, and for our work lives. Because in our world, we just seem to be getting more and more divided. You know, everyone seems to be driven by what they want and about their own opinions. If you go into schools, you go into universities, you go onto Twitter, you go down the local pub, whatever it is. There seems to be the big desire at the moment just to drive us apart, doesn't it? Or is that just me? You've got politicians becoming so much more extreme. We seem to want more equality, but the more equality we seem to be getting, the more pushing apart and separate we seem to be becoming. And it seems to be really hard. We seem to be giving people more labels to try and differentiate them. And rather than bring people together, which seem to be dividing people, whether it's politics, religion, sexuality, gender, nationality, race, job status, social status, academic achievement, whether you're vegan or a meat eater, it just seems to be we want to divide. And we seem to think everyone else is wrong and we're right. Isn't that true? You're going, yeah, but I am right, Jim. They're all wrong. But at least in church, I remember a few years ago, I had a Muslim guy at my last church become a Christian. And he said, I love Christianity. He said, you guys are just so united. He said, us Muslims keep fighting. I smiled nicely and weren't there. Because do you know there's more than 45,000 Christian denominations in the world? And it seems to be, wherever we are in the world, we like to divide, don't we? We like to be a bit different. Whether it's Stoke and Vale or whatever else it is. And I wonder, though, just wonder inside each of us, if the reason that we live in a world that's so divided is because we actually know inside ourselves that we're quite divided in ourselves as well. We have a bit of a battle going on inside of us. So we not. And I think all of us, I don't think I know all of us. If you say you haven't, you're a liar. Okay, all of us at times have internal battles going on. Whether you're a Christian or not a Christian, you have this battle going on in yourselves about doing the right thing and not doing the right thing. Even a battle amongst yourselves about, should I let that person out in traffic? Should I not let that person out in traffic? And these questions are all going on in ourselves. What is the right thing to do? And quite often it's actually really hard. And often when we talk to other people, often the battles that are going on inside of us, they come out of us. And we end up getting angry and blowing things up. You know, often we have a battle between the person that we share with everyone else and who we really are. You know, I like a little bit of reading, and I'm really interested that on psychology and that sort of thing. I'm not an expert like Brighton or Ayo. Those are the experts, therapists and psychiatrists. But I read a book a while ago, by a guy called Steve Peters, who wrote a book called The Chimp Paradox. And he talks about the fact that inside of us, in our brains, we have these two parts of our brains. And I'm probably going to massacre this. And those of you guys that know what you're talking about can come and have a go at me afterwards. Okay. But I'm going to make this really simple. He talks about two parts of our mind. He said you've got your limbic system and you've got your frontal lobe. And the frontal lobe is what develops later on after you've matured, supposedly. And your frontal lobe's the thing that keeps yourself under control, that knows the good questions to ask and reflective and thinks about things. It's a logical part of your human brain. And then your limbic system is a little bit of you that's okay all the time and a bit emotional. Some of you are controlled about it a lot more. So what they say is your limbic system is really important, because when you've got a baby, the baby doesn't say to you, please, mum, would you give me some food? The baby screams out at you and screams out, because that's a limbic system kicking in, goes, I want that now. I want the milk and I don't care what situation is. I need you to change my nappy now. I remember when I was part-time at Burslem, previous congregation, and I went to a meeting and I used to say to people, I'm really sorry, I've got to bring my daughter with me. And I was in this meeting with these ministers one day and some other community guys, and Sophia, my oldest daughter, she dirtied her nappy. And then she's like, Daddy, nappy. And I'm like, shh, just wait a minute, I'm in an important meeting. And eventually she got her nappy stuff out in front of these blokes, put her nappy things right next to me, and pulled down her pants and went, Daddy, nappy now. Okay, and I was just like, child. And sometimes those things keep you going, those actions. She was like, my nappy is bad and I'm getting it sorted now. Maturity, you say, Dad, I'll wait till you finish your meeting. But she wasn't mature then. She was just like, going for it. And actually, the problem is, a lot of us, we have that fight between the limbic system, what we think, the emotional side of us, and the frontal lobe, the things we should do. How many of you have said something you shouldn't have done? And then later on, you're like, following morning, going, I should have slept on it. Or you put something on Facebook, and the following day, you have to apologize because you shouldn't have put it on there. We've all been there, haven't we? Well, some of you say, I'm not on Facebook. Yeah, but you've shouted at someone else, haven't you? But these things, they go underneath it. We often call it a drama king or a drama queen. People are very led by emotions. But Paul also talks about this battle that goes on. And we have this battle between our limbic system and our frontal lobe system. We also have that battle inside of us that Paul talks about here in Romans 7, verse 21 to 23. It says, I've discovered this principle of life, that when I want to do what is right, I inevitably do what is wrong. I love God's law with all my heart, but there's another power within me that is at war within my mind that makes me a slave to the sin that is still within me. And isn't it amazing how you read the scientific books and they seem to match up with the Bible quite regularly? And we have this fight within us. We can't get away from it. This fight between doing the right thing and not doing the right thing. Reacting emotionally and not reacting emotionally, thinking about stuff. And the pulpit is that a bit inside of us, that limbic system, it's really good. It keeps you alive. It keeps you going. It keeps babies growing up. It lets us know there's a problem. When you're hurt, when you feel things, it's a really good thing. But sometimes we can let our emotions and other things inside of us, that nature inside of us, control us. When we really want something, but we know it's wrong. You know, and the problem is, with this fight that goes on inside of us, we can end up a little ball of anxiety, worrying about, being full of destruction, overreacting to situations, breaking down relationships, because we're reacting with what's just inside of us and out of our emotions. And you see, in church, I believe, and in other organizations, I believe a lot of our problems that we have about disunity is because we've got a lot of things going on in our own personal lives, and we say things out wrong. Isn't it true sometimes? Maybe at work you should have been calmer because that boss of yours has done that same thing again, and you're just absolutely fed up about it, and then you go into work one day, and you have a big argument, okay, with your husband and you or your wife, okay, and you go in there and you're really angry and you're worried about having to go home and face your wife when you go home. So you walk in there and that very moment your boss says something to you and it just pushes you over the limit, and then all of a sudden you just start screaming and shouting out stuff at them. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Yeah, some of you go, never, big liars, okay? And the problem is we have this battle inside of us, between that emotional part of us and that thinking part of us, where the Bible talks about the thing that's right and the thing that's wrong. And the problem is that anxiety just builds up and up and up. And if you look at Jesus' disciples, when Jesus pulled together his group of followers, he pulled together the most anxious, crazy, immature men possible that had completely opposite ideologies in the world. And he brought them together to become a movement that has transformed the world, that has over 2 billion people following him today. Isn't that amazing? And it was a unified movement from a bunch of guys that were crazy. So one of Jesus' followers was a guy called Simon the Zealot. Now, Simon the Zealot was a terrorist. There's no other words for him. He was going around. They were trying to kill Romans. They were ready to determine to wipe the Romans out of Israel. They were part of this group that was sort of thought, we follow Jesus, Jesus might kill all the Romans. So he's there. Anything to do with the Roman Empire, he's like, I've had enough. They're dead. They finished. Absolute terrorist, a freedom fighter. Then you've got Matthew, another follower of Jesus. Now, he was a tax collector. And as I've shared before, you may not like tax collectors today, but back then they were even worse, okay? And Matthew's job was to work for the Roman government. So here you've got Simon the Zealot wanting to kill everything to do with Romans. And then you've got Matthew who's working for the Romans, whose mortgage is paid by the Romans. And here they are, Jesus brought them together. Then you've got John and James. They were two brothers. And you know those men whose mum always tell them they're the best thing in the world? These were two of those guys. They were mummy's boys. And in fact, their mum once came up to Jesus and went, Jesus, you know when we get to heaven, can you get one of my boys to sit on your right hand or one of my boys to sit on your left hand? And Jesus is like, what are you asking? They were so loved. Now, some of you might be going to your spouse next to you. You're one of those right now. But their nickname was Sons of Thunder. And it wasn't just because they ate loads of baked beans. It was because they got so angry. And they just would shoot off at absolutely anything. And then you've got Peter. And if anyone is suffering anxiety, you've got Peter. Oh my goodness. Now this is a guy whose original name was Simon. But he reacted to every little situation that went on. So as soon as Jesus says, right, I'm going to have to die for you. No, you're not going to die. No. As soon as the Roman soldiers come to take Jesus away, everything Jesus has predicted, Peter pulls out a sword and chops the Roman's ear off. And it's just the way he was. He reacted. He said stuff. He did stupid stuff. He was impetuous. But after they spent time with Jesus, when they got secure in Jesus, when after Jesus transformed their lives, they became known as men of peace and of love. He transformed the world and he worked for unity. Guys, I don't know how you are, but personally in my life, there's times when I get a lot of things wrong. My wife keeps reminding me of that every day. But as Christians, we're supposed to break down barriers and labels that separate us. And we need to be united in Christ. United in his love, united in his forgiveness, united in his hope, united in his passion, united in his teaching, and united in his ways. And this is what Jesus said in John 17, verse 20 to 23. He said, my prayer is not for them alone. I also pray for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you've sent me. I have given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be as one as we are one, I in them and you in me, so they might be brought to complete unity. Then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them, even as you have loved me. You know, Jesus' prayer in the world is for unity. Jesus' prayer is that we're united in him, and the church is an example of unity for him. And you know what? I think the church is actually quite unified, more than people probably give it credit for. But there's some things in our lives that stop unity happening. And I just want to talk about two of them today. I just want to talk about how they impact us and what we can do about them. The first thing is this. Anxiety. You know, we come across anxiety all the time. It seems on the rise across the world. But the problem with fear and anxiety is fear and anxiety make us do crazy things. It drives us more than we realize. You know, most of the time when people come up to me as a church minister and they say, Pastor, I want to talk to you, normally they want to share a fear that's going on in their lives. You know, I shared this with someone who's involved in management this week. And as soon as they started looking at this perspective, they said, it's like everyone coming to speak to me. It's like they're bringing all their fears to me. And I was like, yeah, because it's what we do. You know, most of the time our anxiousness, what we're feeling about, is we're justified in it. A situation might be happening in our family and we get anxious. Maybe you're concerned about work. Maybe your anxiety comes because of your health. Maybe people are concerned about the direction of the church. Maybe people are concerned about their children. And when your body becomes anxious, it goes into a fight or flight mode. And the problem is, we need to be aware of when we're feeling anxious, because what we'll do is often we will react. So I'm just going to give a church example. If we're feeling anxious, we get ready to fight. So when you're feeling anxious about something, that's all that matters. And you're ready to fight anybody who disagrees with you. And you'll stand up there and you'll cause arguments. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? The anxiousness, you're ready to go for it. Oh, I'm really anxious about the situation. And you start arguments and you cause disunity. You might do it at work. And the other thing is this, if you don't fight, the other thing people do when they're feeling anxious is they run away. You might be one of those people who've just run away from jobs after jobs after jobs after jobs. Because every time you get anxious, you don't realize you're anxious. You just think it's time for a career change. When actually it's the anxiety that's inside of you. I remember a few years ago, I had one guy in my church. And he was a great guy, loved Jesus, his life was turned around. And every time there was a problem, he ran away. And I said to him one day, I said, if you go out of that church and you run away again, I said, you will never stop running, because every time there's a problem, you will run away. Do you know what happened when he went to his next church? A problem came. He ran away. Do you know what happened when he went to his next job? A problem happened. What did he do? He ran away. It's what you do when you're anxious. It's your defense mechanism kicks in, and it's really good, because when a lion comes up before you, you run away. Now, when anyone knows me, I'm terrified of rats, okay? Absolutely petrified of rats. And I've got a marathon in a few weeks' time. So yesterday, I had to do a long run. And I was running along the canal, just coming out of Hanley Park. I was absolutely shattered. I just run 10 miles. I was pushing myself. And it was amazing, because I saw a rat run across. And all of a sudden, I was 2 minutes quicker for my next mile than I was the mile before. Because I was absolutely terrified there's another rat going to come out. And then these little moorhens kept shooting out. And I kept thinking they're rats, and I sprinted on even more. Because it's what you do. It's a good thing. But it's not a good thing when it causes you to keep running and running and running. Guys, what church? When the pastor changes something and you don't like it, and you have no theological objection, you get anxious. What if it doesn't work? What if my friends stop coming? Will I stop coming as well? What if I don't like our churches? What if I don't like, and your anxiety builds up in you and you can react. What if it means my friends won't come and stop coming? Who am I going to have a gossip with? What will it mean for my family's legacy? Will it be forgotten? And suddenly your sin and your flesh and your anxiety kicks in. And you can justify your actions. But when you get anxious, that's when you react in ways that you probably shouldn't react. And that's when you can cause hurt and damage. It's no surprise that Jesus constantly says, do not be afraid. In Matthew 6, verse 34, he says this, therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough of its own, troubles of its own. And then Paul, later on in the New Testament, says this, do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. You see, God knows that anxiety causes problems. God knows that anxiety wrecks people. God understands this. That's why he keeps telling us about it. He keeps saying, put your cares onto me. It's not easy, but it's what you need to do. And quite often when we're anxious, we react in ways that aren't great. You know, me and Naomi, we're not going to give any stories, don't worry, love. Okay, but we can tell when each other are anxious. We can tell because often I become fractious. She never becomes fractious because she walks on water. But I get a little bit, and at times I have to realize, you know what? I've reacted with my kids because I'm anxious. And it's so often in church that we're anxious about things and we react with people and we don't want to go or we act really badly because we're anxious. And if we want to be a unified church, if you want to have a unified workplace, if you want to have a unified family, realize when you're anxious. I've got a quick story. In the Old Testament, there was a king called Saul. And Saul was, he did it right when he started, and he was doing really well, but then he decided to do his own thing. And God says to him, right, that's it. I'm going to put another person as king after you. He wasn't going to kill Saul or do anything like that. He just says, your family are not going to be the kings from now on. Well, Saul went absolutely crazy. Saul went mad. And he found out who the next person God had appointed king was, David. And he went and he was determined to kill David. And the thing was that really surprised me here is that it didn't make a difference to Saul the fact that David was going to become king. But for Saul, he was really anxious because he was thinking to himself, what about my children? My kids aren't going to become king. What about my sons? I want my family to continue the family line, and what's going to happen? And I look at Saul, and I think he's getting a little bit anxious. But you know what the crazy thing was? That Saul was stopped from being king, but the new king was going to be David. And who was David's best friend who was happy for him? Saul's son, Jonathan, who should have been the next king. And Saul got anxious, and Saul started defending someone and defending something that didn't actually need to be defended. And how often in church and how often in our workplaces have we stood up for someone else and went, Pastor, if you do that, what about that little old lady back over there? The little old lady goes, I don't really care. Or maybe at the workplace, your manager says to you, what about this? What about you changing this? And you go, but what about that person? And the manager's already spoken to that person. You're just reacting because of stuff in your own life, not because of the other person. You see, anxiety breeds disunity. And I want to encourage you, whenever you're dealing with stuff in church, in your families, in your workplaces, realize what your anxiety is doing. But the next thing, as well as anxiety, the next thing we need to be very aware of that brings disunity is this: pride. Can we say together, pride? Pride. Now, we all struggle with pride. I remember a few years ago, I like to pride myself for not being proud. No, joking. Okay. But a few years ago, I was reading my Bible, and I was flicking backwards and forwards. And when I read my Bible, I didn't just read it just for the sake of reading it. I read it and say, God, can you talk to me? And I had this Old Testament passage and this New Testament passage. And they were completely unrelated. And it kept coming up, pride, pride, pride. And I went, but God, I haven't got any pride. Why does this keep coming up? Are you trying to tell me something? And then I prayed, and I went, God, if I have got pride in my life, will you show it? Oh, my goodness, I really wish I'd never asked that prayer. Okay, don't ask it unless you're prepared to deal with it. You know, pride is really, really important that we deal with it. Because there's been times when I know in my life I've been anxious and I've been worried, and I've reacted in ways that I shouldn't have reacted, but then I'm too proud afterwards to apologize. You know when you say something, because maybe your wife hasn't done the dishes just how you like them. If you're in my house, you'll understand what that means. Okay, and you can be tired, and you can go, oh, and sometimes I've got to go, you know what, oh, I was an idiot. I shouldn't have shouted at you. But your pride stops you from doing that. As the great 21st century philosopher Elton John said, sorry seems to be the hardest word. But if we want unity, we need to lack our pride. There's a Bible verse that says this, Proverbs 11, verse 12. It says, when pride comes, then comes disgrace. But with humility comes wisdom. That's pretty good, isn't it? I wish I'd authored that. When pride comes, then comes disgrace. But with humility comes wisdom. How do we deal with pride? We learn to say these words. I'm sorry. Say to the person next to you, go, I'm sorry. That's just for ahead of time, especially if you're next to your husband or wife. You got one in there, okay? You're ahead of the game. You know what? Pride causes disunity. Anxiety causes disunity. It causes disunity in families. It causes disunity in workplaces. I've seen pride cause disunity in churches. And if we want to be unified, we need to be conscious about our anxiety, but we also need to say sorry and ditch our pride. You know, there's times when stuff can be justified. There's times when the way you felt actually is perfectly justified. But there's also times we need to say sorry. You know, I've dealt with stuff in my life, and I'm not going to share it today because it wouldn't be honoring to people if it goes online. But there's times when I have said sorry to people, even when they haven't said sorry back to me. And I actually know, your hand on my heart, that they probably have more to say sorry to me to than I have to say to them. But why did I say sorry? Because the unity of a relationship was more important than my own pride. That's really, really hard to do, isn't it? But guys, we've got to remember, as Christians, we believe Jesus died on the cross for everything we did wrong. And sometimes we can act like saying sorry is like we're being nailed to a cross, when it's not. I'm coming into land so you can breathe. But one of my favorite, probably my favorite preacher actually, and author, is a guy called Peter Scazzaro. And he says these words, it's his catchphrase. He says, if you want to be spiritually, it's impossible to be spiritually mature while remaining emotionally immature. It's impossible to be spiritually mature or remaining emotionally immature. You know, see, our spiritual side and our emotional side, they're mixed together. And just because you trust Jesus doesn't mean that you won't suffer from pride or anxiety. Instead, we just learn that we have to identify it. And we have to be honest about it. And I want to just encourage you today, just to look at your own lives. Have you become a bundle of anxiety? Maybe you're sitting here and you're going, oh, Jim, that's me this week. I've been reacting to every little thing. I want to tell you this. The first thing you do, it's not the only thing you do, but the first thing you do is you come to Jesus and you say, Jesus, I can't do this by myself. If you're a bloke, or well, ladies too, but particularly blokes, it can be a little bit of a pride issue because I deal with everything myself. But Jesus says, cast your burdens unto me. You know, sometimes we're so caught up in being right. We're so caught up in the stuff that we've got wrong in our lives, or about stuff we want to defend because stuff's done to us, that we won't release stuff. We won't release our anxiety. We won't release our pride. And Jesus just says, bring it all to me. Bring it all to me. Guys, if we're honest and we're more self-aware to ourselves, often we stop God allowing, we stop God from allowing God even to do his healing process in our life. We stay broken. And we all know that hurt people hurt people. Guys, if you want to have a unified church, if you want to have a unified family, if you want to have a unified workplace, then the way you start is by looking at yourself and by saying, Jesus, please can you change me? And as we look at the lives of the disciples, it wasn't a quick process. It's not like a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am, it's all sorted. It's a process of spending time with Jesus, saying, God, I can't do this, but I know you can. It might mean you going and also speaking to a doctor and getting medication as well. But if you're prepared to deal with it, God will be with you. And God will help you. And God will push you through. It's time to stop being a slave to our pride and our anxiety. It's time to come before God and say, God, I can't deal with this. I need you. And the amazing thing is, and I know this in my life, that God gets alongside you. He puts people alongside you and he encourages you. Can we stand together? Oh, Jesus. Just going to pause a moment. Just going to pray. But before I pray, I just want us to close our eyes. Don't worry, if you're in church today, it's not, we're not going to nick your wallets or anything bad like that. Okay, just going to pray. But you might have come in today and you might have thought what I said was a load of rubbish. That's okay. But I actually think some of you just a little bit of this has resonated with you today. The church is the size at the moment. There's going to be people. And some of you have come in and just feels like you're a ball of anxiety today when you walked in. Just a moment's quiet. I want to encourage you just to say, Jesus, in your own hearts, Jesus, I need you. Lord, I need you.